Deer Trucking Awesome. What do you think of when someone says tough? Honestly, I think of a Toyota truck. Tundra's one mean mother of a truck with a twin-turbo V6, an incredible going power, and the Tacoma claws through terrain with a taller suspension and lots of creature comforts in the cockpit. Both Toyota trucks are decked out with tons of cool features and tech you'll dig. Check them out at Toyota.com, folks.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
Hey everyone, before we get started on this notebook edition, I want to tell you about DraftKings. The long wait is over. Golf's first major of the year is this weekend. Golfers are headed to San Francisco to tee off and compete for the crown, and there's no better way to join the action than with DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app. To celebrate golf's first major of the year, DraftKings Sportsbook is offering special odds and promotions all weekend long, and all new users get a sign-up bonus up to $1,000. Every day of the tournament, DraftKings Sportsbook is boosting your profits by 30%. All you have to do is opt in and place a bet. Head to the app right now and check out all they have to offer, including player props, day-by-day action, and even hole-by-hole live betting. That's the most fun thing you can possibly do. You can only sometimes you only have to watch golf for like 3 minutes, and you can place a little bet, watch, see if your bet hits. That's like by one of my favorite, probably top five favorite gambling things to do. So download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app right now and use promo code DNVR when you sign up. For a limited time, all new users can get a sign-up bonus up to $1,000. That's right. DraftKings Sportsbook is going all out with a sign-up bonus up to $1,000. Just enter code DNVR when you sign up. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older. Colorado only. Bonus comprised of a first deposit bonus and a first bet match, each up to $500. Deposit bonus requires 25 times playthrough. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. What is up, everybody, and welcome to the DNVR Nuggets podcast. I'm your host, Adam Mattes, from thednvr.com, where you can subscribe right now for $5 a month. Just $5 a month, and you get a free t-shirt. Practically pays for yourself, and you get access to all of our premium content. You become a member. You join the club. You're in. You know what? I don't even have to sell this. DNVR is one of those things now where it's like, if you know, you know. And I think a lot of people know. I don't hear too many complaints, too many regrets about the subscription. Today's episode of the show is going to be on the notebook episode. It's going to be going back over some of the details that I saw. I've now watched the game 2.5 times and feel like I have a pretty good grasp. I'm so excited. I'm so excited for the season and excited for that, you know, that the Nuggets got the win and that things went the way that they did. Michael Porter Jr. playing that awesome game. That watching these games 2-3 times is like no chore at all. Now, of course, come Wednesday, if they lose to the San Antonio Spurs and I have to watch that thing again, I promise you it'll be a little bit of a chore. But at least this game, you know, watching it again and just seeing all the little things that Jokic did, Michael Porter did, Monte Morris, he really looked a lot better on second watch than he did on the first one. You know, it was fun. It gets me excited. I kind of like the fact that the Nuggets play at 2:00 on Wednesday, because that means I don't have to wait too long. I don't have to wait the entire day. I basically get it right there early in the afternoon. So I got some notes here, and I want to go over them. If we have some time at the end, I'll look ahead to San Antonio and just kind of talk briefly about what to kind of expect in that game or what I'm hoping to see in that game. But let's first dive into these notes. If you're new to the show, notebook episode, I go in order of my notes. I take notes throughout my rewatch, you know, somewhat detailed notes. I'll splice clips together that I'll throw on a column that I call The List. It's really just a video series. So if you're a subscriber to DNVR, you can go online and check that out. My first note on here, Michael Porter Jr. had an outlet to Jokic rim running. And when it happened, I had this thought. We don't see Jokic as like the deep guy down the court on offense too often, mainly because he's such an anchor for the Nuggets defensively that he's grabbing a lot of defensive boards, or he's just the last guy down the court. So having Michael Porter in, and especially early on, as engaged and focused as Michael Porter was in this game, Jokic just found himself with the opportunity to kind of run out, and it was nice because that you always think of Jokic throwing the bombs like Gary Harris and Jamal Murray, but for him to be on the receiving end, I hope this isn't a one-off. Jokic is so good when he rim runs. He's so good when he beats the defense down the court and is able to establish low position. One of the best in the game, but the Nuggets don't get nearly enough of this. Some of this is because Denver doesn't run as a team. They play just at such a slow pace. But I would love to see more of Jokic sort of running in transition. I'd be curious to see what the numbers were. Him and Mason Plumlee haven't played a whole lot this year, including in the bubble. But I wonder if when they were playing together, if Jokic was getting a lot of those sort of transition points. That'd be kind of an interesting sort of statistical deep dive. Porter to open this game was red hot. I mean, he was red hot throughout it, obviously career high 37 points. But he was red hot to start it from all three levels, knocking down threes, you know, mid range, getting to the rim off cuts, offensive rebounds. It just felt like his touch, man, on jumpers, his jumper is so smooth and so pretty, but his touch on just finishes around the rim is what continues to surprise me about him. There's a lot that surprises me about him. His rebounding for one, just his length and athleticism for another, sort of the control he has with the ball in his hands. You watch him dribble, he doesn't look like he would be a, you know, like have a good handle. And I still think his handle can get cleaned up a lot, but it's very serviceable. Like he's able to beat guys off the dribble and make moves and handle the ball in his sort of tricky situations, tight situations. And he just has, his skill set is so much more complete than I thought. I kind of thought of him as this like jump shooting gunner, but he really, his touch around the rim and all the little things that he does to score, it's the complete, offensively, it's pretty much the complete package. I don't know what I would say offensively he can add in terms of a skill. What he can add is a better feel for the game, you know, the two-man game, the three-man game, things like that. But just in terms of raw skills like touch around the rim, footwork inside, footwork outside, he's so far along in that. It's funny, I saw on Instagram, somebody sent it to me today, you know, Will Barton said something for him like, you know, you're going to be special. And MPJ said, just trying to be like you. And Will Barton said, dude, you're light years ahead of where I was when I was your age. If one, Will Barton's just the realist. And I love that he, you know, is willing to take players under his wing like that and kind of pump them up. But at the same time, it's true. Michael Porter Jr. is such a like polished offensive talent, and he has a lot more polishing to go, but he's just so far along that it's not, if you really think about 21, 22 year old players, and especially if they're rookies, you think, okay, maybe they can do this or that, but we got to teach them to do, you know, we got to teach him to catch and shoot, or we need to teach him to like dribble and shoot, or whatever it is, all the little skills. And he just, you don't have to worry about with him. He's so far along on it already. I love watching this dude play. I mean, right now, I said this before, but in a lot of ways, it reminds me of watching Jokic those first few years, where it was just like every game you're looking forward to because you haven't quite gotten used to the skill set, so it all feels like a new surprise. And watching this game, man, it was such a joy. I had a smile on my face the entire time. It's pretty awesome. He talked about wanting to fix his effort and mindset and called Michael Malone. This has been talked about a little bit on yesterday's show, but, you know, his maturity on that end, and just, it really does seem like his relationship with Michael Malone is really good right now. And I know we speculate a lot about, oh no, you know, not playing a lot, he looks frustrated on the bench or this or that, but it sure sounds like he's handling this rookie year and sort of sees it for what it is, which is Michael Malone testing him. I see sometimes people send me comments like, Michael Malone doesn't like him, he should demand a trade, this or that. It seems like he knows that Michael Malone does, in fact, like him. He's just trying to really instill some of these lessons into him, and I think that's a real positive. So 12 points for Michael Porter Jr. early on. He's just too big. They had Dort on him. They had Roberson on him for a while. And, you know, Roberson is like a tall, long, athletic defender. And used to be. I mean, we'll see how he, you know, he's just now coming back from basically a two-year hiatus for injury. But he's still long. He still has those, you know, the good technique. Michael Porter made it look easy in the times that Roberson got switched out onto him, because he's so much taller, he's so much more athletic, and he's so skilled that he knows how he can employ those. I'm really curious to see Michael Porter get a shot against some of the elite defenders. I want to see LeBron guard him. I want to see Kawhi and Paul George, because against guys like that he's gone up so far, he just makes it look like those guys aren't even in front of him. Like they're a mild inconvenience at best. And that's just so encouraging. Bol Bol got a little first quarter run. I would like to see some more Bol Bol, and I think we will going forward. The Nuggets, you know, have a back-to-back coming up Wednesday and Thursday. They got the San Antonio on Wednesday. They've got Portland on Thursday. And, you know, I don't know if Jamal Murray will be back. He's listed as questionable on the report. Will Barton and Gary Harris are listed as out.
the fact that you have seen some players around the league, like Jonathan Isaac, go down with injury today. Who else was it? There's another player that went down. I can't believe I'm blanking on who it was. You see players go down with injuries, and you think, okay, Denver is smart to sort of slow play it. You don't want to rush guys back and have them play, especially when these games are as meaningless as they are, just in terms of, you know, Denver doesn't want to fall. They want to rise. They have a chance to be the 2 seed. The Clippers lost today, so technically Denver controls their own destiny for the 2 seed. But is there really a difference between playing, say, Oklahoma City, who will likely be the 6 seed, and actually, I shouldn't say likely, that could be the 6 seed, and then Dallas, who is almost certainly to be the 7 seed? I don't think so. Both of those teams are tough, so I think you just rest them. So Bol Bol here with a back-to-back, I suspect that at least in one of those games, his minutes will get up into the 10, 15, maybe even 20-minute mark, assuming no other players are cleared to play between now and then. And even if Jamal Murray is the only one, we still might see Bol Bol and get a little bit of an extended run, which, of course, I'm all for. The Nuggets, when he's in the game, the Nuggets actually play a lot of zone, and I find that interesting. I don't know if that's because defense in the NBA level is so complex and he hasn't had any practice, and Malone's just kind of like, hey, man, this is what we're going to do. I don't know what the strategy is with that. Or maybe it's that he's so tall that when you stick him in the middle of a zone, he is such a rim deterrent. Maybe that's the reason. Maybe it's because they don't have a lot of guards, so it's not so much about worrying about Bol Bol, but when he's on the court, you have big players standing out on the perimeter. He's basically a small forward on offense, but in center, if you stick him in the middle there, well, that means you got to spend Jeremy Grant somewhere else. You got to spend Paul Millsap or Mason Plumlee somewhere else. So you end up putting bigs up on the, you know, out on the perimeter guarding guards. That's no good. So I think the zone is why they run it. I have a note in here, Jeremy Grant, and I've talked about this a lot, but man, do I have an example of this on the list. He does not use his athleticism on offense very well at all. In fact, he plays like an unathletic guy. He had this move, and it's on the list, but he has this move where he gets around the defender with a dribble move all the way to the rim, and there's a guy who's late rotating and kind of jumps, and rather than just dunk that guy through the rim, which he absolutely could have done with his vertical, he like tries to finesse his way around him and shoots it backwards over his head and airballs it, and he turned what was, it at a minimum, a slam dunk, and at maximum, like an and one, into an airball layup because he didn't want to get the contact. And he's done this. This isn't like a one-off. I've said this about him for a while, but this example was so egregious that thinking about him defensively as this long and athletic guy, I think applies because he's very good at using that, especially in one-on-one defense. But thinking about him as offensive, he's not going to dunk ever. Like, he's almost never going to dunk on somebody. So if he plays, you might as well consider him like a 6'5", below the rim type when he's driving into traffic or what have you. And that's really disappointing. Denver has an interesting decision to make with Jeremy Grant. I'm really curious. All year I've kind of thought that, oh, for sure they'll go after him. But, you know, with Bol Bol so sort of waiting in the wings, and then also just the numbers with Jeremy Grant, Nikola Jokic, not great, which is crazy because the numbers with Jokic and anybody is pretty good. I'm curious how Denver approaches his free agency and what that looks like. They paid a first for him, so maybe they feel pot committed. But I'm curious. I'm lukewarm on Jeremy Grant. I think he's a good player, but I don't know that I'm in love with the guy or in love with the talent. Bol fouled on the break. It's funny. He's so tall and he's so good at deterring shots at the rim, but he had this one where he was, you know, in position to at least contest, and he's so long that for him, just putting his hands up near the basket makes it hard to score on. But he got ran into in part because he like was afraid of the contact. It looked to me like he was afraid of the contact or unsure of the contact. And to me, that's going to be one of the biggest things. There was a couple times in this game, actually, where I thought when he was in, where I thought, man, he just doesn't like contact. He doesn't like to like get hit or push or whatever. And that's one part of his game mentally I think he's going to have to overcome, because for him to be the best version of himself, he's going to have to be in a lot of sort of sticky situations. You always say if you're a shot blocker, you're going to get dunked on. It's inevitable. You're going to get knocked over. You're going to get posterized. You just have to get through that, and you have to sort of embrace the, hey, I'm still so tall and I'm still so intimidating just from a shot blocking standpoint that, you know, so what if you get bumped a little bit? Guys are going to be afraid of you the more you sort of like embrace that contact. Dozier had a lot of, this is a weird Dozier game. He had a lot of weird decisions early. I think he's, we talked about PJ composure, you know, how he's so composed. I think what it might actually be is he's just like in really confident, especially for a guy who hasn't really stuck around in the NBA yet. And he played like it. He took a lot of possessions where you would think, man, he's looking guys off or he's just trying to get to the rim or whatever. And not necessarily in a good way. But overall, I thought the Nuggets had a lot more intensity on the defensive end. Part of this was that Michael Porter was just playing so hard, and he was one that was playing not so hard in the previous game, that it really the contrast really stood out. But one of my big notes here is just that Denver was playing hard, and that matters sometimes. That means a lot. Take a quick break here and tell you about Breckenridge Brewery. Breckenridge Brewery is DNVR. DNVR is Breckenridge Brewery. One day maybe the companies will merge. I would love that. And then I get the Adamatas beer. What would that be? I don't know. I'm actually bummed. I actually went to, this is how cool the DNVR bar is. I actually went to Spano over the weekend because I found out that they were going to replace the Mountain Beach with Strawberry Sky. Strawberry Sky, my second favorite Breck Brew. My number one is the Mountain Beach. And I told them, hey, can we replace something else there? That's my favorite one. And I think I succeeded. I think we're going to have Mountain Beach back at the DNVR bar. You can try out the Mountain Beach if you haven't already. It's a great summer beer, as is the Strawberry Sky. Both of those peak summer beers, the Colorado Core, the Hot Peak IPA, the Vanilla Porter Jr., which is, you know, quickly climbing up people's ranks as we speak, the Avalanche Amber Ale. They got all kinds of stuff where you can do the Jokic Pack, the 15-can sampler. You get three of five different beers, all of them fantastic. Become a Breckenridge Brewery person. You're a DNVR person. Now you're a Breckenridge Brewery person, as are we. And thank God, because it's a great beer. It'd be a real drag if we were like something else, some disgusting beer. And I was like, oh, you guys, have you not tried the, man, what would be a really terrible beer? The Yusuf Nurkic IPA. Oh, it's terrible. From some scrub brewery. Nope, Breckenridge Brewery. Fantastic. Check them out. One of our great partners. And you can even get food at their farmhouse, which I highly recommend. I also want to remind you about DraftKings. You know, you want to bet on these NBA games. This is like March Madness right now. There's games going all day. You fierce at network, you throw $5 on every single game, and then it just gives you a little incentive to kind of keep checking back the score and give you something throughout your day to kind of get excited about or depressed about, depending on how good you are. You can get DraftKings Sportsbook. Again, they're giving all users these special odds boosts. If you just check your emails or check the app for all the different odds boosts, you'll find out that they almost at least like once every 3 days give you some deal that's too good to pass up. It's like, you know, 10-1 odds on something that should be 50-50, and it's just crazy. And if basketball's not your game, well, of course it's your game if you're listening to this, but not to bet on. If you just like basketball for what it is, but you want to bet on something else, DraftKings has great odds and promotions on all sports ranging from MMA to baseball. MMA, sneaky fun game to bet, or sport to bet on, because then you get so intense, you're like screaming like a meathead at the screen. DraftKings Sportsbook is U.S.-based, making it safe, secure, and reliable. Just download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app and use promo code DNVR. Don't forget that promo code. Must be 21 or older, Colorado only. Other terms and conditions and eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. It's nice to see Bol Bol drain a three. It's funny, he had a post up and he had an undersized guy on him and he turned to dunk it and he got his shot blocked. And what I think is interesting about a player like Bol Bol, I was thinking about this when I rewatched it, he's 7'2". In his life, he has rarely gone up with players who he had to work about being able to block his shot because he's so tall. I mean, he played college basketball, he played the AAU circuit, but even there, he's so tall, so skilled, so long that if you're, you know, at the AAU level or even the college level, you can have a center who's like 6'8", and it's like, okay, but yeah, but he's so skilled or he's so strong or whatever it is that he can hang with most people. When you're 7'2", though, he could just turn and dunk on those guys. So he turned to dunk it thinking he had an easy lane to the basket, and he gets rejected. But what I liked was ball goes out of bounds. They run a play for him to get a three, and he drains it. So confidence not shaken just by getting his shot blocked. And it was just nice to see him get on the scoreboard since he only played a handful of minutes. Chris Paul also went right at him, which is, you know, interesting. He back-to-back possessions. He basically ISO'd him and shot a mid-range jumper over him. Only Chris Paul, not intimidated by Bol Bol's reach. I also think about this kind of stuff. Like, Chris Paul's been in the league for a long time. He's been in the league since Bol Bol was like 8 years old. So you have to imagine, Bol Bol has grown up knowing Chris Paul as this like basketball star, and here he is on a court with him. I kind of get a kick out of that. And Chris Paul doing his thing where he's like, yo, you have a 9'8 standing reach, not intimidated, not afraid. When Bol's on the court, I mentioned this earlier, but he's primarily offensively basically a three. I don't know. He's an interesting one because I don't think he's a five. I think he's a 4-3 sort of hybrid. And so I think that going forward, it's going to be interesting to see how Denver pairs him. If they can play him with Michael Porter Jr. On the court at the same time, and Jokic, of course, you know, maybe. I think so, obviously. But it's going to be interesting to see if there's like, you know, defensively they have a lot to learn because none of those guys are naturally there or whatever. But it's interesting to see that at least right now he's playing a lot with two other bigs. He's going to have to work on his jab step. He's got all these great skills, but they're just a little too robust. He has a little bit of cleaning up to do. And when you're that tall, some of these travel calls are, you know, young, smaller players maybe get away with it because they're quicker and it's harder to kind of see when your foot drags. With him, he's so tall and so long that it's very pronounced when he sort of drags a foot or dribbles a second too late. So in this offseason, he has his work cut out for him. But nonetheless, he's so smooth with his handle that I think once he cleans it up, he's going to be a real problem. This note I've talked about a lot, but Michael Porter Jr., he just finds himself in scoring position a lot. And that alone to me is a talent. It's not that he's like, oh man, he did something amazing with the ball or this or that. It's just, you know how there's players that always just, Juancho was this way, that just always seem to be around the basketball, like rebounding or cutting or just, you kind of always look up and go, oh man, he's in scoring position. Well, that's him. And he has a nose for it. He's fun to watch off ball because even offensive rebounds, he doesn't just like run at the rim. I mean, if it was as easy to offensive rebound as Michael Porter Jr. makes it seem, then everybody would be grabbing offensive rebounds. But if you really just key in on him on a possession, especially when he's not touching the ball, the angles he takes when he crashes the boards, I mean, he's just so good at putting himself in his defender's blind side, and he's so good at sort of getting them to misread what angle he's taken to the basket. So, and then once he gets there, he's so tall and so quick that he's gonna grab it. He just finds himself in scoring position. It's a real talent how he moves to place himself in key spots. The Nuggets actually opened up a 10-point lead in the second quarter, and they really started to get things rolling. But a lot of this is that Jokic, MPJ, too, like when they're both on the court, you're just going to be such a positive. You can really start to rally off points. And Denver's defense was stonewalling Oklahoma City, and then they were scoring every time down court, and just it was a nice rally going on. Oklahoma City, I was trying to think of what things in a playoff series would be different from Oklahoma City, and they didn't have Dennis Schroeder. He went home for the birth of his child, so he was not there. I think he'll make a huge difference because Denver really has struggled with him in this season and in recent seasons, and also just they struggle in general with speedy point guards. That's one of their kryptonites. So I think he would change the dynamic. And then the other one was they just didn't double him in the post. I don't think that they trust Steven Adams. It's kind of because it's funny listening to some of the national pods over the last few days talk about the Nuggets, because they've really talked about how much it's like it's on everybody's radar now that Jokic sort of abuses Steven Adams, that's such a favorable matchup for the Nuggets. So the fact that the Thunder did not double team Jokic at all, even when they had easy opportunities to do it, makes me think that in a playoff series, they're almost certainly going to change that defensive strategy, and they just didn't want to tip their hand or, you know, kind of let Jokic get a read on what they'll look like. So that if they do match up in a playoff series, that'll be interesting to watch. Michael Porter Jr. is so aggressive. This is my next thing in here. Is he just he never stops attacking you. I think he's got a great motor. He did run out. He played 44 minutes or 43 and a half minutes in this game, and he did, I think, kind of run out of steam a little bit. He's still got to get used to that minute total. But he doesn't, when he had gas in the tank, he didn't stop attacking, and this included the fourth quarter. He just kept going. Like sometimes it's play after play after play. He doesn't settle. He'll take jumpers, but for him that's not settling. He's, I think, an elite shooter. But it's just he's always looking at the rim and thinking, how can I put this thing in there? How can I put this ball in the hoop? Pretty late in the second, Dozier kept calling his own number, and he actually audibled away from Michael Porter Jr., who was absolutely on fire. And to me, especially watching it, I knew that he had made some questionable decisions. But man, when you see a guy that's hit like 2, 3, 4 in a row, and then you see him an opportunity to kind of get him the ball in decent position, and you say, "Nah, I got this one." Really rubs me the wrong way. And I'm not saying PJ is necessarily a selfish player, but I think maybe he's more of a attacker. I don't know. We're still getting to know PJ's game, but he might be one of those guys that's always in attack mode, a la even in some ways like an Emmanuel Mudiay. And point guards, especially if you're not an elite point guard like a Russell Westbrook, you really have to figure out the moments where, okay, somebody else has it going. I just really need to find ways to set the table or just play within the system. Jokic is on the court. I don't necessarily need to be so aggressive. I don't think he did a great job of that in this game. Michael Porter Jr. had this pass to Jokic off of a cut that I think is a glimpse of the future. And just to set the table, to sideline out of bounds, Michael Porter Jr. catches the ball basically at the free throw line. Monte Morris sets a back screen for Jokic, who sort of curls from the wing towards the basket, and MPJ hits him. Now, this is very Jokic-esque, right? Jokic loves to operate from the free throw line or from the elbows, and when you get those back screens, Jokic is so good at threading the needle. Well, it was in reverse, and a lot of that is just because of how tall Michael Porter is and how tall Jokic and big Jokic is. You'll always think of it going from Jokic to MPJ, but MPJ has that ability too, just because of how talented he is, but also because of how tall he is. And that's a really encouraging thing. I'm curious to see if MPJ gets a lot of passes and assists to Jokic, not just the other way around. Finally, halfway through the third, I thought Monte Morris was okay in the first half. I thought he was really good from about halfway in the third all the way out, and he was fantastic in the fourth quarter, a huge reason why they were able to take the thing to overtime. But in the third, he started to get it going. And specifically, he started getting it to going by turning the corner in both pick and rolls and in some of these. Denver was running a lot of, like, it's pistol action, but it's where he's receiving a screen coming from the corner basically in transition, but the screen was never set. And I have great examples of this up on the list that you can see, and you can really get a feel for what the action is. But those plays, you know, it's kind of like you would say it's the primary action would be for you to go to the basket. It doesn't happen very often. Maybe one out of every 15 times you run this sort of set, do you get to go downhill, the point guard get to go downhill towards the basket. But he did a very good job of sort of freezing his defender and then freezing the backside. More importantly, freezing the backside defender and then getting to the basket and just with a burst of speed. And that's so important, both for Jamal and for Monte. It's so important that they're able to do that because it keeps the defense honest and it puts them on their heels, because when you have slow point guards, the defense maybe thinks that they can get into you and they can pressure you because, oh, this guy's not going to beat me off the dribble. He's not going to get around me. When you do burn them a few times, they start to second guess that, sag off a little bit, and it opens up everything else that you're trying to run within the flow of the offense. He did a great job of that, I thought, starting with about the 7-minute mark in the third quarter and continued throughout the game. And actually, PJ Dozier had a couple of these as well, so I have some examples of each of them that go up on the list tonight. Malone went with his defensive lineup in the third quarter, and it got crushed once again. I think over a span of 5 minutes, they had one field goal. And that defensive lineup, Dozier, Craig, Millsap, Grant, and Jokic, it's hard to get too upset about because the Nuggets don't have a lot of options. I mean, they have to rest somebody, and, you know, there's not a lot of, like, offensive weapons you can go to, but I don't know that Denver can keep going to that one. It's two games in a row now that halfway through the third quarter, you've ran the risk of blowing whatever lead you had or just blowing the game because you put in a lineup that is honestly not that great defensively to begin with. And then because it's too big and it's just Millsap's kind of lost a little bit, lost a step so far. But offensively, it's just almost a no-hoper or very little hoper. So two games in a row, I'm curious to see if Malone mixes that up. Maybe try to throw Bol Bol out there instead of Jeremy Grant. Maybe he gives you a little bit more of a dynamic look offensively and you don't sacrifice too much defensively. I don't know, but I don't know if you can keep going to the lineup that defensive lineup that gets crushed. MSU Denver Online puts a dynamic education at your fingertips without forcing you to decide between earning a degree and living your life. MSU Denver is the Colorado institution providing rigorous and affordable online programs taught by professors who bring the real world inside the classroom. MSU Denver graduates use their relevant degrees to land coveted jobs. Some of our very own staff members at DMVR are taking these, including the Peloton Prince. So one of MSU's mantras is learn to lead the change. MSU Denver serves services Denver and is a steward of the community. They believe in value without compromise, excellent education at a great price, professors who care about you, formats that fit your life, and taking a gap year, plans change, our mission never does. Use your gap year to maximize your skills. You're going to want to check out MSU Denver Online. Seriously, if you guys are thinking about going back, trying to get a new skill, I think you should be a lifelong learner. And also, it's never too late to sort of change careers, develop a new skill set, and try something out. So check out MSU Denver. Rugby fans, you may have heard us mention that there's some big things happening right now with Colorado rugby, and now we can spill the details. DNVR is covering all things rugby in Colorado and in the United States. That's right. Colton Strickler, our reporter, he's keeping you up to date on all things American rugby with the DNVR Rugby Podcast, and you can find his written rugby content right on our site with the rest of our coverage. It was just announced that Infinity Park in Glendale will be the new official training center for the men's and women's USA Eagles 15 teams. That means that Colorado is the place right now to be for rugby in the United States. We're the mecca of rugby. Make sure you are keeping up to speed with us and Colton on the DNVR Rugby Podcast. Colton is basically doing like rugby 101 pods right now to break down the game, and they're really incredible. So I highly recommend if you're wanting to get into that. He also brings exclusive one-on-one interviews with some of the biggest names in American rugby. So check it out, the DNVR Rugby Podcast and all of our stuff at DNVR Rugby. In the fourth quarter now, and PJ Dozier, he has such an explosive first step. If you look at his skill set, I think defensively he really has some upside. He's been fouling in here, but I think some of that has to do with just like, you know, when you're the G Leaguer, the two-way contract guy, you never get the benefit of the doubt with the officials. But explosive first step from him, and I think that's one thing that Denver's missing. If you look at the backcourt, you'd always love some more shooting, maybe some more length, but more than anything, I think a first step, a guy that just gets around the defense with a little bit of ease, and, you know, you're going to laugh when I say this, but there's a little bit of, like, Westbrook in his game. Obviously nowhere close to Russell Westbrook, but just in that ability, and I think this is a skill set Denver could sort of foster in him, is the ability to sort of catch a swing pass on the move. If you think about a swing pass, ball's going, let's say, from left to right. If you're able to sort of catch it going at the ball, like you attack the basket is arriving to you, the ball is going one way, your momentum is carrying you the other, and the defense is sort of shifting one way and then has to shift the other. He had one of those in the fourth quarter that I thought was really impressive, and it really showed off his first step, and he got all the way to the rim. Missed the layup, but it was a foul. Should have been an and one. The foul should not have affected his ability to finish. But you know, so he's got some raw parts to it, but I do think he has a very explosive first step, more so than maybe any of the other guards on the roster. The back-to-back Michael Porter Jr. threes were maybe the best part of the season. No one of them. The seven is the best side, and then those Jokic game winners. But outside of that, the Michael Porter Jr. three in the corner, go down, get a stop, sprint up the court and pull up for three. Those were just, I mean, pure adrenaline. Outside of Jamal Murray, who else on the Nuggets makes those kind of plays? And Jamal Murray even, you know, doesn't make them too often. You know, he's capable of it. But we've seen Jamal Murray get hot maybe 20, 25 times total over the, you know, his career so far. So to see Michael Porter Jr. with sort of those moments where it's just like, man, you better pick this dude up at half court, because if he gets to the three-point line, he's pulling it and he's not hitting anything. String music. He's just so aggressive and so confident. It's almost comical how confident it was. I was talking to Brendan Vogt about this, just like, isn't it kind of funny when you see a guy that just has like no doubts about himself? Like every human on earth, it's like not every apparently, but most humans have like some like shred of doubt in their eyes or in their mind. And he just seems so like supremely confident to step into shots and everything. I thought Denver played great, and I thought they were going to lose. I'm not going to lie to you, because Oklahoma City hit some big threes off of great defensive performances by Denver, and then there was like two or three in the fourth quarter alone where you think, okay, Denver played great defense, did all this, and the ball, you know, gets deflected out to a wide-open three-point shooter. One of those was Chris Paul, who he hits one with 3.5 minutes left, and it puts them up seven, and I just thought, oh man, Denver's probably done. Points were so tough to come by at this point, and you know, it felt like it was one of those like Michael Porter had played well, but we're just not going to get the W out of it. But it was not to be. I say that to set the table because even Eric, who's an eternal optimist, kind of had given up hope at that point. And rewatching it, I'm thinking, oh man, I forgot that they were down this much. But that just made it all the more impressive that they were able to sort of bounce back in that final 3.5 minutes. And a huge tip of your hat to Monte Morris, who I thought was really, really solid for the Nuggets in the clutch of fourth quarter. The closing lineup they had, both for the end of the game and for overtime, had Michael Porter Jr. at the two. I don't know how much two he's going to play going forward, although I'm optimistic that he's capable of doing it. There's going to be teams where it's a huge mismatch, but I think Denver can afford to play him there against a lot of teams. And hopefully in playing, you know, hopefully, especially throughout the course of a regular season, you sort of, he gets acclimated to what he needs to do in those moments. But offensively, he's just going to be so much taller. The game ceiling, the game ceiling tip, just to kind of Jokic, I think Nuggets are up 6 points. Like 40 seconds left or something like that, and Jokic gets a layup to kind of seal it. And the way that actually happened was that Denver ran one of their common plays. This is going to be up on the list, of course, but I call the play wedge roll. You recognize the play. It's where Jokic receives a screen coming from the right block over to the left elbow, and then he kind of goes over, you know, he cuts off of that down to the right block and then will post up. Well, Denver runs that action a lot, but because they were playing Jokic, Millsap, Grant, and Michael Porter all at the exact same time, Jeremy Grant was being guarded by Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Now, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is not going to be able to contain Jokic in the post. This was great play designed by Michael Malone, who, you know, clearly knew how the team was going to be guarding him. So they place Jeremy Grant in the screener spot. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is now tasked with sort of like fronting Jokic until the defense can recover, something he did not recognize, but even if he did, he would have been, you know, sort of incapable of doing. And so Jokic basically gets a wide open layup. He misses it, and then he tips in the rebound. But it's one of those things where you think, oh yeah, offensively, you throw that much length out there, but not just length, skilled length, and then you can run some really interesting actions, which Denver was able to do and get the layup out of. So really, really fun game overall, really interesting one. And you know, watching it through a second and even a third time, I was actually more encouraged by what I saw and just sort of the direction that Denver's going. Now, quickly turning our attention to San Antonio, you know, they're quick. They're guard-oriented. One thing Denver hasn't been exposed to so far in these first two games is teams that just have tons of guards and tons of speed. They're going to see that in San Antonio, and if Jamal Murray is not back, it's going to be a real interesting test of size versus speed and you know, guards versus bigs. And San Antonio's well, you know, they have a great coach. The Jakob Poeltl is one of the best. I know he kind of looks like a goofball, but he's one of the best defenders. You know, big man defender. So it's not going to be a cakewalk for Jokic. So I'm really curious. I would not at all be surprised if Denver lost this game. I think it's going to be a real challenge and a different challenge than what they've seen so far. So I'm really looking forward to it. Hopefully they get Jamal Murray back, because I just am itching to see him on the court. But if not, hopefully we get some more Bol Bol in this one. Thanks so much for tuning in, everybody. Don't forget to leave a 5-star rating and review if you enjoy the show. We're going to have the full squad back for the next two nights with hopefully winner's lounges, but post-game shows going live immediately up on our YouTube page. If you haven't already, go on YouTube, look at search for DNVR, and you're going to check out all of our cool content. We have a lot of unique things on there. You're going to want to follow us on Instagram. We have unique stuff on there. I'm telling you guys, we do so much content. Any given day, we do so much content over at DNVR, and you're going to want to check all of it out. But do us a favor and leave a rating and review so we can get this up to a 5-star pod. I think we're a 4.5-star pod. We want to get it up to a 5-star pod. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow. Closing out today's show, telling you about Green Mountain Dental Group up in Lakewood. They're the best damn family-owned dentist in the metro area, and they're extreme Colorado sports fans just like all of us. Our sales director, Lindsay, went up there and had her wisdom teeth removed just a couple weeks ago. Said it was literally the best dentist experience of her life. I know that because she wrote this copy and she put in there literally. So she literally said it was the best dentist experience of her life. I think she also told me she hasn't been to the dentist that many times prior to getting Green Mountain Dental. So maybe she's both telling the truth but also lying at the same time. But seriously, they send you a personal card to your home after becoming a new patient. They're incredibly caring. They're sports fans. And if you schedule a cleaning, x-ray, and exam, you'll receive a free Sonicare toothbrush. And you got to tweet at us when you go there. Nobody likes to tweet when they're at the dentist's office, apparently. But if you go, hey, tweet at us. We'd greatly appreciate it. So check them out. They're only 15 minutes to Denver. And they're a great family-owned business that supports us. So we support them.